From Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Wednesday, April 17th. Coming up, since the Alabama Supreme Court ruling that threatened IVF services, lawmakers in some states have discussed or taken steps to protect access to fertility treatment. That story in just a few minutes, but first, these headlines. Unofficially, Republican incumbent Adam Niemerg won his write-in campaign for the 102nd district race for the Illinois House of Representatives. IPM's May Anthar reports.
Niemerg won 9 out of the 11 counties in the district. In Champaign County, he lost to challenger Jim Acklin by 173 votes. Both attribute that to Acklin's proximity to and canvassing in the county. But Niemerg says there is more to it.
What you were looking at there was Democrat voters crossing over. Now, we don't have those final numbers yet, but the woke teachers unions, the Chicago teachers unions, Illinois Federation of Teachers, was whipping votes within the education system.
The official results from the March primary will be released on Friday. Niemerg says preventing indoctrination in schools will continue to be a main focus of his second term. He's also working against a new bill that would ban Native American mascots. May Antar, IPM News.
Illinois Jewish leaders are concerned about a major increase in anti-Semitic incidents. Alex Degman reports.
The Anti-Defamation League recorded a 74% uptick across Illinois last year. David Goldenberg, regional director of ADL Midwest, says it's not anti-Semitic to protest the war in Gaza and criticize the Israeli government, but it is anti-Semitic to blame all Jewish people for the war.
The suggestion that Jews anywhere in the world are somehow responsible for the action of a democratic government in some other place and saying you have to carry the burden of that. That in and of itself is anti-Semitic.
The ADL audits both criminal forms of anti-Semitism, like physical assault, and non-criminal, like distributing leaflets. Nationwide, the group says anti-Semitic incidents increased 140% last year. I'm Alex Degman.
Congress took time to honor Urbana native and educator Dr. William Patterson. After a short stint in prison, Patterson earned a PhD and created initiatives for Black middle, high school, and college students, like a rehab school bus filled with STEM activities and a studio. Yesterday, Representative Nikki Budzinski of Illinois' 13th Congressional District recognized Patterson on the House floor.
As we mourn his loss, we also celebrate Dr. Patterson and his work, work that we must honor by continuing to follow his example of leadership and excellence.
The 58-year-old died unexpectedly earlier this month. On Sunday, Patterson was remembered in a 4-hour memorial service at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. University of Illinois students, alumni, and staff traveled to Springfield yesterday to make the case to lawmakers for more money for the school system. The university is asking for about $780 million in funding in the state budget, an increase of about 12% from last year. University of Illinois President Tim Killeen says the extra funding will help the school respond to growing student enrollment.
Materially, right now, we have the wind in our sails in this state, and that's not true everywhere in the country. So we want to take best advantage of this period of growth, stability, and investment.
Killeen says the money would be put toward student mental health services and faculty recruitment, among other things. Still to come, since the Alabama Supreme Court ruling that threatened IVF services, lawmakers in some states have discussed or taken steps to protect access to fertility treatment. That story is coming up next on 217 Today.
Based on real-life events, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office from Masterpiece is a shocking story of ordinary people locked in a battle against a powerful government-owned corporation. For more than a decade, the government blamed British Post Office managers for missing funds, which ruined lives and reputations. But workers uncovered glitches in the Post Office's own computer system, which it had denied for years. Friends of WILL can binge all 4 episodes of the series now with Passport.
This is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. Lawmakers across the U.S. say they want to protect access to in vitro fertilization after an Alabama Supreme Court ruling that threatened IVF in that state. SideEffects Public Media's Morgan Watkins spoke to Judy Darr about that. She's the dean of Northern Kentucky University's Law School and has published a leading legal casebook on assisted reproductive technology like IVF.
The Kentucky legislature passed a law last month that gives healthcare providers immunity from criminal liability if they make a mistake on the job. A Republican state lawmaker says that's broad enough to protect IVF providers. What's your read on the new Kentucky law? Does it address the concerns about IVF access raised by the Alabama ruling?
The bill in Kentucky does not directly address the kind of liability that arose from the Alabama Supreme Court decision. The Kentucky bill addresses criminal liability. The Alabama case is about civil liability. It's a case based on a wrongful death statute, which is a tort, and torts are civil wrongs that are mediated between private individuals versus criminal conduct, which is between the government, a prosecutor, and a citizen. What doctors were really worried about in Alabama was the reading from the Supreme Court would allow a patient to potentially receive punitive damages, high damages, for negligence related to the embryos. Prior to that decision, all of the other attempts, and there have been prior attempts for plaintiffs to seek these wrongful death types of liabilities from IVF clinics, courts have turned them down, largely saying that the embryos shouldn't be construed as children or human beings under these tort laws.
Since the new Kentucky law focuses on providing immunity from criminal liability, is there a benefit to doing that in terms of protecting IVF providers?
I don't profess to have an encyclopedic knowledge of this, but my impression is the number of prosecutions against IVF providers in the context of care is minimal. There are some notorious cases over the course of the 40 years that we've enjoyed IVF, 40 plus years in the nation, but it's a handful. So I'm just not aware that this was a real problem, and I'm not aware that it was a real concern for physicians just based on prior practices. But at the same time, I understand that lawmakers wanted to do something to reassure infertility patients that we were going to try to protect access. But how much it will really impact practices remains to be seen, because I don't think it was a tremendous problem either in the Commonwealth or even really throughout the country.
What's the significance of the Alabama court ruling on IVF for other states?
The concern isn't so much that it has an actual impact, but rather that it'll have a cascade effect on judges who would be interpreting similar laws in other states. About a third of our states have a wrongful death act that's very similar to the Alabama law. And so it's quite possible that in those states, judges could interpret it in the same way as the Alabama court did, deeming that the embryo could be considered a child and therefore subject to punitive damages for mishandling.
What are you seeing other states do to protect IVF?
The main pivot point came in June of 2022 when the United States Supreme Court handed down Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, overturning Roe v. Wade. And many of us in the assisted reproductive technology realm predicted that what the Alabama court did was exactly what was possible, where there no longer is any constitutional protection for reproductive choice. In the wake of Dobbs, a few states did take action to protect IVF. Some states enacted exceptions to their abortion statutes that say there's a carve-out for IVF, that anything in the abortion statute would not be applied to IVF. Other states like Ohio had, by direct democracy, enacted a constitutional amendment that protects reproductive rights and specifically includes access to fertility care. So there has been some movement to protect IVF through lawmaking over the last 2 years.
That was Judy Darr, a legal expert on reproductive technology at the Northern Kentucky University School of Law, speaking with SideEffects Public Media's Morgan Watkins. SideEffects Public Media is a regional health reporting collaboration of NPR member stations. And finally, in your forecast, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says today will be mostly sunny and breezy with a high of 73 degrees, west wind gusting up to 40 miles per hour. That's it for today. 217 Today is produced by Stephanie Mosqueda. Reporting today contributed by May Antar, Alex Degman, Reginald Hardwick, Jade Marceau, and Morgan Watkins. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.